I like the scrotum raw more than I like the balls raw. I like balls when they're sautéed. They get very sweet and nutty. No pun intended.
Oh, look at that. She had her eyes on the prize as the girl next door. You grow up quick when you grow up poor. It's the only way to LA that she knows. The Hollywood Pose, teeth, tits, and toes. Didn't take her long to leave the boulevard. So many five-star friends with black credit cards. She'd try anything once, cause anything goes. It never comes easy when you're digging for gold. Well, she ain't no Cinderella when she's getting undressed, cause she rocks it like the naughty wicked witch.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Got a lot of great things to talk about this week. Maybe a little bit of a long show, sorry about that. Doing a late Sunday show, so we'll get your week started off right. Most of you probably won't be catching this until late Monday, maybe even Tuesday. But right now it's a little overcast. Got a little cassoulet going on downstairs, baking a loaf of bread. Got the confit going. House smells awesome. Still enjoying this cold weather, although I know my friends in Pittsburgh are in, Shit Creek, but it's more like Snow Creek. Anyway, fun to be back, and thanks for tuning in. Bobby Bogner will be on a little later. Can't wait to talk with him about his show Food Tech. Hoping to hear if a decision has been made to return for a second season. I think his show is awesome. I really do. It really shows how deep the rabbit hole goes with food production in America. It's not the Alice Waters show, okay? We know it's not that. He said it wasn't going to be that way. Food in our country is not always pretty. But neither is Donatella Versace. And look what she's done. Well, what has she done anyway? I don't even know. Didn't she like marry into money? God, she's butt-ass ugly though. Oof. Anyway, first show I've done since the Super Bowl. Great Super Bowl this year. The commercials were horrible. But I was thinking about how silly it seems that people use Super Bowl Sunday to eat like crap. Like it's somehow become this holiday to splurge and fall off the wagon and do things that would cause you to get high blood pressure. More crap is consumed on Super Bowl Sunday. It's just amazing. There's this great sense of guilt that everybody feels on Monday morning anyway. You stay up too late. You drink too much. You know, maybe you lost some money on the game. So you wake up on Monday, you're hungover. You feel like this hungover, degenerate gambler anyway. And on top of that, you ate like crap. Why do we do this to ourselves? I don't understand it. I think as the years go by, and I've noticed this, I do less and less and less on Super Bowl Sunday in regards to food and drinking. It's just another day. It's a big football day. It's a good football day. But I just don't see the need to party. I drink less on these days now. I may give myself one bad thing to eat. It's usually chicken wings because I love chicken wings. It gives you high blood pressure. Anyway, I know this isn't a sports show, but there are two audio clips that I had to play for you guys because I thought they were so damn funny. All right, New Orleans wins the game. I hate to be a spoiler. None of you caught the game. New Orleans beat Indy. And normally, you know, after the game's over, they're going to ask the winning quarterback, hey, you just won the Super Bowl. What are you going to do now? And it ends up as a Disneyland commercial. It's like, hey, Drew Brees, you just won the Super Bowl. Now what are you going to do? I'm going to Disneyland. You know the drill, right? You've heard this for years. So after the game's over, this one sideline announcer stops to interview one of the Saints' defensive backs. And then this happens.
Carl, you're a world champion. Tell me how you feel.
Man, I feel great, man. I know I'm going to Disneyland.
Dude, that is awesome. Motherfucking Disneyland. Where is that exactly?
Carl, you're a world champion. Tell me how you feel.
Man, I feel great, man. I know I'm going to Disneyland.
Okay, here's another one. I'll keep it short. Drew Brees goes on Oprah, okay? And Dan Patrick played the shit out of this, but it's so funny. God bless Oprah. Okay, she doesn't know any better. No one really knows this guy. She's got Drew Brees on. Nobody really knows a whole lot about Drew Brees. Nobody knows why he's got this big giant thing on the side of his face. He's got this giant birthmark on the side of his face. And anytime someone's got something even semi-disfiguring on their face, you don't want to point it out. But here's how Oprah introduces him.
Wow, 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 wow! All right, who just kissed you? There's a big old kiss right there. Wow, it's so wonderful to see you.
Someone kissed you. Yeah, dude, and I can't get this damn lipstick off. Can you help me out? Wow, 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 woo! I got a beer. That's what I'm wooing about. I'm drinking Mischief from the brewery. You guys hear about this? You saw my video, the durian video. We featured this beer. Dude, Patrick Brew is hit a home run here. It's a hoppy golden ale that I don't know if it's close to damnation. I wouldn't really say that. But it's sweet, and it's delicious, and it's a great balance, and it's really good. I don't know what the distribution is like. Hopefully, it's going to be hitting the East Coast. Mischief. It's about $8 here for a 750-liter bottle, milliliter bottle. Really great beer. Nice balance. It's got some little pepper in it, you know, probably from the yeast. And just bang on. Love this beer. Anyway, I'm not sure if you guys caught the Durian Challenge video, but we feature it, you know, on the video. So if you want to see what the beer looks like and see us pairing it with durian, which I'm not sure exactly made Patrick happy, but yeah, you got to pair it with something. I don't think anyone's ever really paired durian with a beer. So we thought, you know, that'd be a good idea. Anyway, I posted this on the website as well on iTunes. It's nothing great, but Don had emailed me from Jakarta and he said he had fresh durian from a street vendor there and asked if I'd be up to the challenge when he returned to eat it with him. And of course, you know, I'm not going to back down from the challenge, especially from the master of laying down the gauntlet. Any of you guys remember Dude Night? You'll recall that gauntlets were thrown down all the time. On that show, all the time.
Okay, you ready? I'm going to press the button and he's going to get a jolt. Ready? Here we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Dude, this is terrible.
Yeah! Dude.
Anyway, the next week he's here. He brings fresh durian that he purchased at 99 Ranch Market. And we ate it outside, of course. I mean, my wife's understanding. She's not that understanding. But I had to videotape it, so I did. And as you'll see in the video, I did really like it. Although the carriage that held the actual fruit smelled like crap. Absolute garbage. Almost like death. That part, they say that part smells. That's no hype. It really did stink. But the fruit itself was great. And I'm glad I ate that. That's a scent and a flavor that literally undescribable for me. But then later, I think Nick NG, listener of the show, you guys will see him comment all the time. I think he said he had it, and he said it tasted like kind of like bananas and pineapple, which is pretty good because it's got that warmth of bananas and then the sweetness of pineapple, but not too sweet. Just fantastic. Anyway, I'm getting down to this. What dawned on me after doing this was that how many things in life we might miss because we back down from a challenge or a dare. And it doesn't even have to be a challenge or a dare. I think back about a week before the Durian episode, I was challenging myself to eat this ghost pepper meal with Joe. And I couldn't back down once I got there, even though I really wanted to. Joe might be worse than Don. You know, we were at Bazaar. First time I ever went to dinner with Joe and Peter. And I was full. I'd had enough. And she offered me something. I think it was like the Philly cheesesteak and air bread or something. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, I said, you know, I can't eat anymore. She looked at me. She has this thing hanging up. She's standing out, pointed at me. She goes, Phil, what do you got in your pants over there? I thought you were a man. Eat it. What's I going to do? I had to eat it. And I'm glad I did because that was a really good thing. Maybe one of the best things I had all night. We need this. We need to challenge ourselves to constantly try new things always. Because if we don't, we'll fail to grow as foodies and as humans. We have to have these experiences. And we're in the situation where these experiences don't happen to everybody. We have to take advantage of them. In doing this, we break down the perceptions that we have about things. Not just about food, about everything. How many people told me, I love that post on making the head cheese with pig's feet. Better you than me. I'm like, dude, try it. Seriously. Try just a taste of it. You might like it. It really was delicious. I'm happy I went through with that. Would I try to do it with pig's head at some point? Absolutely. Have I ever tasted pig's face? No. Will I? Yes. I ate a pig's eyeball once. I'm not afraid of food. It should be afraid of me. You know, like Tommy Lasorda once said, I don't get heart attacks, I give them. This isn't about whose balls are bigger. This is about knowing that you've tried something. In my life as a foodie, I want to be able to say, at the end of all things, I've had that. I didn't like this. I loved that. This was okay. I can form these opinions myself instead of saying, that sucks, without actually knowing because I hadn't had it. This is why Andrew Zimmern's show, God bless him, it's one of the best important food shows on television. The world eats different things. Are they bizarre? Maybe to us, yeah. But to them, no. Absolutely not. And how fortunate I am here in California with these cuisines at my disposal to be able to say I would like to try this and then have the opportunity to actually try it. It doesn't cost me a lot of money. As a lover of the world's food and the world's culture, I'm extremely lucky to be living where I'm living. You can bring all the earthquakes, all the wildfires, all the mudslides that you like. You can spare me with the Terminator as my governor, okay? But outside of that, this is not a bad place to live. I never read whole comments here, but this one hit the mark for the show, and it just so happened to come at an appropriate time. It was the night we did the durian thing. Fred Williams comments on the Boudin War post from last year. Not part of the podcast, just the blog. And here's what he wrote. He said, I first tasted blood sausage made by my mother's uncle when I was 10 years old. Ever since then, I bragged to my friends that I've tasted blood sausage. The problem is that I'm 51 years old, and I haven't tasted it since. It was homemade, and Bernard was French Basque, so I suppose it was a form of Boudin Noir. I hope that someday soon I'll be able to find something comparable to the memory I have of blood sausage. Fred is 51, still remembers having tasted blood sausage, still brags to his friends about it still. Dude, brag. It's worth bragging about. How many people can say they've had it? Brag not because it's extreme, but because you've tasted something they have not dared to taste. They won't put that in their mouth, for whatever reason. You did it. You tasted something not many have. And why haven't they? Maybe because they don't want to know the truth, that these weird and bizarre and incomprehensible foods are really actually quite palatable, and in most cases, just downright delicious.
Everything was going swimmingly until I ran into the terrifyingly precocious Sierra Partis, Michael's daughter, who spent the rest of the evening beating up on me like a veal cutlet.
For Christmas, my dad got me a college neurology textbook.
Why?
Because I wanted one.
Why?
Because I went through a phase where I wanted to be a neurologist. Microbiology and nanotechnology is very fun. Each microchip looks like a city.
You're like the smartest person I've ever talked to on this show. How old are you?
10. I'm half Czechoslovakian.
Really? We're going to Czechoslovakia in a couple of weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
And if you say, jak smash, that means how are you doing?
Really?
In Czech. My grandfather taught me that.
Yeah, well, you're going to work for this show, I tell you. You work harder than me, and you know more than me. But it's hard, also. You're not buying that, are you? No.
Yeah, sitting on a plane for 18 hours, and in first class eating chicken and prime rib, and then going to foreign countries, and walking around and eating great food, and buying souvenirs. Oh, yeah, it's got to be a really tough job.
Oh, man. I'm feeling bad now. That's harsh. Kid's diabolical. It's diabolical. I've never encountered a more incisive critic of my life's work. Yeah, by the way, watch your language around the kid, okay? He's a foul-mouthed man. Have you ever noticed? The language.
I watch the show.
Oops.
You have to sign a book for my mom. And maybe you could sign a piece of paper so I could sell it on eBay.
We'd have to charge you a lot of money for this. You could stare at me, but, money's money, kid.
I split the profits with you.
There we go. Now we're talking. Now we're starting the deal.
You know, he knows Emerald, too. They're very good friends.
My dad hates Emerald.
He doesn't hate Emerald.
He does.
No, he doesn't hate him.
I play pranks on him in the supermarket, and I put Emerald hot sauce in his cart. He says, get that crap out of my cart. I told him about how you hate Emerald.
You can just leave the table for another 10 minutes. We're just getting to the good stuff, you know?
I
I feel like I've known you forever, but I've never met you.
Well, why, thank you. That's a very good dinner party skill, by the way, filling an awkward moment in the conversation.
It's a skill you learn in sixth grade.
What do you just take over the show? I mean, you already stole the thing. I don't even know why I bother. On the one hand, I've had to work about 75% less than I usually have to work on this show. And it is work, by the way, young lady.
Yes, moving your mouth is so much work.
We'll be right back after the break. You sure this is your door? You didn't hire her from Central Casting. It's not a ringer. This is all not some elaborate joke, right? I've just been punked.
Can you believe the mouth on that little girl talking to Bourdain and Ruhlman like that? I mean, I know they were having a lot of yucks here, but dude, seriously, this is what's wrong now. Kids are allowed to say whatever the hell they want to adults. No recourse. If that was us and we were kids, oh, forget about it. We'd have a bar of soap shoved so far down our throats, our ass would look like the Mr. Bubble Machine on Lawrence Welk show. And if you have to ask me who Lawrence Welk is, you're too young to get that joke and probably grew up getting away with this kind of crap. 10-year-old kid talking to Bourdain like that, you know he wanted to smack her across the mouth. Who talks to adults like that? Little brat. Great stuff from his Prague episode, though. Few people realize how important Czechoslovakia has been to beer and what it has given us. The Budweiser name actually came from the Czechs, for Christ's sake. But the beer itself, fantastic, really is. It's a shame what Anheuser-Busch created when they slapped that name on it. But listen to this segment from No Reservations. Kind of long, but Bourdain never really spends a lot of time on beer, and I was really happy to see this. And it's fun to listen to. Listen.
2 hours outside of Prague in the forests of Western Bohemia is this brewery. Until recently, a collapsed, moldering shell stripped of everything by the Ivans. So what is this place?
Well, we are at Pivovar Kotna Šumavija. This is a brewery in a small village in Western Bohemia.
Travel writer and international beer nerd Evan Rail has lived here for over a decade, investigating, pontificating, and drinking the great beers and ales of Europe and chronicling their return.
For beer lovers, what's most interesting is that this brewery makes the best pale lagers in the country, if not the world.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why? I mean, what do they have to do to make it so good?
Well, it basically comes down to two things. It's about the ingredients, and it's about the techniques. They're using the best ingredients in the world, without a doubt.
Now, normally a brewery tour, unless you're actually drinking the stuff, is about as much fun as trying to teach a Yorkie how to pinch out an upper decker. But bear with us, beer fans. Pale Lagers, a Pilsner-style beer, is the most popular in the world. For American mass markets, we've created a thin, weak, vaguely Uruk-quality version of the stuff. But here, much more robust.
Looks like we will be having some beer.
We call pale lagers Pilsners, but that's actually a place-specific name, like Champagne or Kobe or Parma.
So what makes the beer here good?
Well, there are only four ingredients in this beer, right? No. There's okay. Primarily water.
Right, presumably good water.
Some of the best water in the world. Most of the world's barley was originated in Moravia, the other part of the Czech Republic. They only use Czech malt, and they use only Czech hops, and the world's most expensive hops are Czech.
Pilsner-style beers need that special soft water. Less than 7 parts per million dissolved solids, to be specific. They sound like a beer commercial here. But unless you've got some underground aquifer gurgling clear, pristine water out of a forest that's been untouched by time for 3,000 years, forget about it. And if you do find that kind of a thing, be sure to ride your unicorn over and tell us all about it.
Hey, that's good.
It's a little bit bitter.
No, I feel very,
nostalgic?
Yes, it's a very nostalgic taste to me for some reason.
Oh, I think the country has a certain nostalgia for beer. I mean, they've been drinking the largest amounts of beer regularly, per capita, in the world.
Even beat out the Australians.
Beat out everybody.
Wow.
And it's not even close.
Really?
They're ahead by about 30 liters per person per year.
Still, it's a pretty productive country, right?
They still seem to get some things done, yeah.
But this is a classic flavored beer, I mean, in the sense that it's not hippie beer. It doesn't taste like wheat or strawberries
No.
I don't like this. To me, is good beer.
The Czech Republic beers are really drinkable. You can have one with a meal and enjoy your meal, and you can have one with the next meal and enjoy that. And I think the consumption here is it's constant. It's not high volume. Right. It's a beer a day, every day for the rest of your life.
So it's not too early by Czech standards to be drinking beer.
Oh no, not at all.
Good. No.
Workers have a beer with breakfast.
and we are workers.
We are working
right now.
Bobby Bogner, host of History Channel's Food Tech, joins us again. Food Tech appears Thursdays on History. Bobby, thanks for coming back to the show.
Hey, great to be back. Thanks for having me back. I guess I didn't ruin the first interview too bad.
Hey, listen, I'm surprised I let you back on this show after what I did to you last time.
Well, we're in a much better space right now in terms of where we're actually talking to you than last time, so at least this one will sound better.
Yeah, sounds great, in fact. Okay, so you're five shows into the first season.
Right.
What has been the response so far?
Oh, boy, pretty great. Really happy with the reviews of the show. In general, everyone seems to be responding to how excited I am when I go into the fields or the factories. So that seems to be resonating really well. You know, we're always going to get some flack that we either don't go hard enough into the industrial food system or we go too far into showing animal processing. But it's a tough balancing act to make sure that you aren't offending everybody that might watch your show with getting the real story out about how people get their food.
I'm going to bring that up because I wanted to touch on that because I respected you for it. Watching the first handful of shows, because I didn't know what to expect myself, it's almost exhausting to see how much detail you guys go into. I mean, growing green onions from seed, planting rice, hand-making mocajetes to grind masa flour. I'm impressed how much information you guys pack into a single one-hour show.
Boy, you know, in retrospect, it might not have been the smartest thing just because the travel schedule was so brutal. But I think that, you know, the concept of the show is start to finish how that meal gets on your plate. And like I promised you the first time we talked, we don't just go to the biggest places. We also, for example, you know, see that gentleman who carves the molcajetes out of lava rocks that he harvests every day by hand. So, yeah, the exciting thing about this show is that it shows detail, detail, detail.
Which is why it's perfect for History Channel.
Exactly right.
There's a lot of truth in your show. In the first episode, you showed how processed cheese was made and why they prefer to use that processed variety in cheeseburgers over regular cheese because of the way natural cheese separates.
Right.
You show how animals like ducks and fish are farmed, raised, and killed. That's the truth. Whether the Alice Waters side of my audience agrees or disagrees with certain ingredients or certain businesses that you feature, this is how food is made in America. This is what the majority of Americans are eating, and I think your show is very responsible in that respect and deserves a long run just for that.
Oh, well, thanks so much. We've all got our fingers crossed for a long run. This is about the time where History Channel is deciding whether or not they want to go for a second season. And so right now we're biting our nails, hoping that other people in America agree with you that you know, that it's worthy of a second or even a third season. We're so proud of it. You talk about the Alice Waters listeners that you have. Well, you know, shoot, man, I love what Alice Waters brought to the food table too. I think that's super exciting. But this is not, and that's how I made my living with Bon Appetit for years. But that's not what this show is about. Here, especially in Southern California, where we live near a bounty of fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, and seafood, you know, it's very easy for us, comparatively, to eat well. And I don't just mean eat a lot or eat whatever we want. I mean to eat well, good quality food, you know, local food. But think about the rest of the country. You know, not every American has the luxury of this abundance that we have, especially here in Southern California. And yeah, so showing how everyone gets fed in the United States is a much bigger story than showing how Chez Panisse gets their food to your table.
I kind of faced this a bit myself. When I first started doing the show, the economy had just started to fall. And I was all about eating organic and the farmer's market and free-range chicken. And not so much about eating cheap food, you know, the generic stuff. But now I stopped and I took a look at myself and I said, how can I stand here and tell people, you know, not to eat this way when it's expensive,
right?
You know, to eat farm-raised or organic or free-range. It's tough. It's a tough pull. It's tough for me to stand here and say that to people. So I understand. That's why, you know, a show like this wouldn't make it on Planet Green, and that's why it's on the History Channel.
For sure. But I think you're coming to a recognition that I've had for a long time, which is that, especially being in the food business like I've been for 25 years, that it is a luxury to eat good food. not everyone can afford that luxury. And when you think about how in the last few years Whole Foods markets went crazy nuts, you know, everyone being able to afford more farmers market, more organic, and I'm sorry, excuse me for mixing my metaphors there, because I realize that farmers market and Whole Foods aren't exactly the same thing. But when people have more money, it's a lot easier to eat good. And now that, you know, people have to tighten their purse strings, they're not immediately thinking of, I'm going to pay a dollar and a half more a gallon for hormone-free milk. What they're thinking is, I've got three kids at home. They all have to have cereal every day, and that's going to save me $5 over the week to go with the less expensive stuff. So, yeah, when it hits you in the pocketbook, it makes a whole – it gives you a whole new perspective on things.
Right, but the one thing I think still is an affordable option is the farmer's market, because it's not really all that expensive to shop there.
Right, well, that's why I said, you know, again, I shouldn't have said farmer's market and Whole Foods at the same thing, but at the same time. But, yeah, provided the farmer's market has what you're looking for, that's great, for sure. You just can't buy your diapers at the farmer's market, and you can't buy your soap at the farmer's market. But for sure, especially if you start meeting the people that are growing your food, you'll get excited about going back and buying whatever they have in season. You know, the greatest thing about the farmer's market is seeing what they have seasonally. Not just knowing that this guy's going to give you tomatoes in the summer, but that he's also going to give you something different year-round that you know you can trust him with.
Right. Now, has a decision been made on whether or not they're going to bring Food Tech back for a second season or not?
Oh, God, no. I would have led right off by saying, yeah, I just found out we're doing our second season. No, it's in the... it's being decided right now, and I'll tell you, last night we were up against the Olympics, and I have a feeling we got killed last last night. But in general, the ratings have been good enough that we're feeling pretty positive. We're not sure yet, and I would never say anything till things are signed, but we feel pretty good about coming back for a second season.
Listen, everybody's getting killed by the Olympics. People are watching curling on television.
Yeah.
Curling is a sport that, listen, if you're in a sport where you could be a janitor and do a good job at this sport, that's not really a sport, is it?
Well, isn't there also, I think I saw this morning that on one of the teams there's a woman who's 5 months pregnant. And, you know, that's I'm wondering if that kind of pushes the limits of Olympic sport there.
Yeah, that's wrong. Hey, what can people do to convince the History Channel to bring you back for another round besides watch you on Thursdays?
Well, for sure, you know, emailing the History Channel and letting them know. There's all kinds of contacts on my Facebook page, either the Food Tech Facebook page or the Bobby Bogner Facebook page, where you can email directly to the programming people at the History Channel. But, you know, the absolute best thing they can do is tune in and watch it. Tell their friends that it's a good show and it's worth watching, and setting their DVR to watch the repeats if they haven't seen the episodes beforehand.
Okay, I'll put links there to the Facebook page and an email address for the History Channel right on the website. You guys can do it all there, mylifeisafoodie.com.
You're the best. And, you know, the great thing about the show is that after the first few episodes, you know, I think we really started finding our voice and how we wanted to approach these food topics. So especially for your listeners, you know, if we come back for another season, you know, I'd love to venture into the world of organics for at least an episode, or at least, you know, spend some time at farmers markets discussing things. So, you know, getting another season is the way we could open up these other worlds to the viewers. And, you know, who knows, a year from now, maybe everyone across America will be eating farmers market and we'll have a whole different show.
Would be nice. Hey, listen, I asked some listeners to send questions for you, and I got a few really good responses.
Okay.
Do you mind answering some listener questions?
No, go ahead. Give me your worst.
I'll give you my best. How's that?
All right.
Okay, Jennifer Litz at Food Bites and Blogging for Biz, great writer. She wrote, having read about the many travel follies of Tony Bourdain in A Cook's Tour, I'd love to know the harrowing details of Bogner shuffling to all these international locations. It's been a while since I've read the book, but I remember Bourdain having to deal with third-world Audubon traffic, half-operable airliners, and the dirtiest dank hotel rooms in the belly of backwoods Asia. What about Bogner? What about that, Bobby? Any interesting stories to share about your travels?
Well, I mean, I can tell you that we didn't go to Asia for this, but we did go to Mexico a few times. We went to Costa Rica as well. And then we went to some of the darkest, dankest hotels available in America, for sure. I mean, there was one hotel I remember where we saw a drug deal happen in the park. parking lot when we were pulling in.
You're kidding.
No, dead serious. And as soon as it went down, they turned to us and basically said, were we looking to buy?
Fuck me.
We check into the hotel, and the person behind the desk said, oh, you're from the TV crew. And we said, yes. And she said, why don't you pull your van up right in front of the check-in here and just leave it parked in the garden here, like not even in a parking spot, so I can keep an eye on your stuff because there's no way it's going to be safe there in the parking lot.
Where was this?
This was in Washington State.
Oh, my God.
So that was one. And so then in that hotel, we go into the rooms, and, you know, this was not first-class accommodations all the way. A lot of times we were just looking for whatever, you know, just looking for a place to stay in these tiny little towns.
Motel 6.
Well, I mean, sometimes that would have looked like the, you know, the Mondrian compared to where we were staying. Motel 6 would have been great. We get into our motel room, and literally in my motel room at the same place, there were two car air fresheners, one hanging from the handle of the door and one hanging from the TV.
Ghetto.
And in the bathroom, in, you know, where normally there would be like conditioner and shampoo and hand cream or something, instead of that, there was mouthwash and soap. And, you know, makes you wonder what kind of a place we were staying in that night.
Oh, my God.
The other really good hotel one was we were in Arkansas somewhere, some mining town. The only hotel we could find was kind of like a row of storage sheds where the truckers would pull up their truck right up to the edge of the shed, go into the shed and sleep, and then, you know, and take off. And this was the only place within 300 miles, so we didn't have any other choice. So we check in, and the woman behind the desk gives us a brown paper lunch bag of soap and shampoo. And we said, oh, well, this is interesting, a little lunch bag. And she says, oh, well, you know, these sheds are just getting broken into all the time, and, you know, the shampoo wouldn't be safe in there if we just left it. Well, I wonder how safe we'll be if you just leave us in these little sheds.
Jesus.
So, you know, they wouldn't even trust a little 39-cent thing, a piece of shampoo in there. So those were a couple of the worst ones. Then, you know, beyond that, one of our sound guys and me got wicked food poisoning when we were in Mexico one time, and we have no idea how we got it, but we both got it at the same time, and, it, you know, it was 2.5 days of absolute misery. So, yeah, travel can be a bitch sometimes.
Wow, that's brutal.
Yeah. But I'll always remember those car air fresheners hanging in the hotel room.
Okay, wow. Yeah, I almost wish Jennifer hadn't asked that question. Okay, Michelle Garnett, a longtime listener, sent an email asking about the Chinese takeout episode. Interesting question. She wondered if you were at all nervous while taking the shell off the duck egg where the baby duck had not quite hatched. She wanted to know if the thought of you accidentally harming the baby duck had gone through your mind.
100%. Absolutely. I was totally nervous. And then I had this revelation. I think it's a little bit in the show, but it wasn't as profound as what was right there, where I realized that I was the first thing that this living being was ever seeing in its life. And I was so amazed. You know, my son still hadn't been born yet. I didn't have any experience like this, but this little tiny duckling coming out of the shell, I wanted to be so gentle with him. And, you know, he had already pipped his way out of it, and all his brothers were ready to come out. So there was no issue of me harming him in that way. But absolutely, I wanted to be so gentle and so delicate. And then moments after, I have this beautiful vision of welcome to the world. I realize that this thing is going to die so I can eat it. and yeah, so it really was interesting. I think you agree with me that if we're going to eat animals, they should be treated humanely. So the last thing you want to do is actually hurt an animal before you kill it. But that was just an absolute smack in the face, realizing that this beautiful little thing was here for me to eventually kill.
You walked right into the second half of that question.
Okay, which was?
She said she also wanted to know if it bothered you at all, going to the duck processing plant later in that episode, after having helped one of these things enter the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for sure. This is where we take responsibility for what we eat. This is where you realize that this is not a carrot growing in the ground that doesn't feel it when you break it in half and toss it in your mouth. You know, meat is animals, and we're animals. So there has to be some sort of recognition that these are living things. And that's why I decided to eat meat, or if those of us who have decided to eat meat are at least educated about what's going on, you know, you can make a choice for yourself. But absolutely. Oh, for sure. And you know what was worse is there's an episode coming up later in the season called Pancake Breakfast, where I spent the morning with these cute little piglets. I mean, boy, I had no idea piglets were so cute. But these things are, like, beyond cute and just have the brightest eyes and just think that you're their friends. And then later on when you're at the pork processing plant, you see how they're, you know, cut up and turned into bacon, delicious smoky bacon. Yeah, you have those moments for sure.
Yeah, that's got to be tough, man.
Yeah, for sure. But it's meat. You know, that's what you have to think about. You have to realize that before it's dead, it's animals, and that's when it needs to be treated well. And then after it's dead, it's meat, and that's what we consume. So you have to understand that whole process. So, yeah, it's powerful.
Okay, Jennifer, bad question. Michelle, good question.
No, both good questions.
Okay, Father Spoon from ShouldIDrinkThat.com said that he loved it when he took a bite of the Tabasco mash.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
While it was like 30 to 50,000 Scoville units.
Is he going to brag about his ghost pepper experience or something?
No, Father Spoon's a pussy. He wouldn't eat a ghost pepper.
Okay.
And when you did, you spit some of that out. Doug wants to know if while filming, there was ever a time that someone got upset that you spit a sample out.
You know what? I'll tell you, just for the Tabasco thing, I had already seen the gentleman who was escorting us through it spit on the floor, so I knew that it was okay.
Yeah, you spit right on his floor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was welcome. I would never just spit on something without without knowing it was okay. You know, there's a lot of editing that goes on. However, what happened in the first time I walked, you know, because there are multiple takes you do of these things. The first time I did it, I swallowed it without knowing it, and he said, "Are you crazy? Just spit it out."
Was it the Tabasco mash? Was it really hot?
Oh yeah, it was totally hot. Again, I know that you're a ghost pepper survivor.
No, listen, don't give me too much credit. I'm going to tell you something. One summer, I grew a bunch of hot peppers one summer, including Tabasco, Cayenne, Habanero, all that stuff. I was eating them right off the vine. They were brutal.
Yeah. Well, this was very, very spicy. I mean, it might... I've had habanero before, but it was always in other things, so the spice was kind of tempered. This is very spicy, and I took way too big a bite, and absolutely it was spicy. It absolutely burned. I absolutely broke out in sweat, and it was heavy duty. But this reminds me, Phil, I know you're a guy's guy, so I'll tell you a story about a buddy of mine from Vegas. We're big dollar bet guys.
Love that. You're already in good territory.
We were at a bar one time, and my buddy Jed bet his buddy Robbie that a dollar that he could drink a bottle of Tapatio faster than his buddy.
A dollar. You see, guys are so stupid.
Right, exactly. Well, let me just tell you, the two of them snapped the caps off those Tapatios and downed them like it was half a beer. I mean, it was amazing. These guys... just nailed it. Now, Tapatio isn't the world's hottest thing or anything like that, but imagine just having it straight out of the bottle.
Pretty hot.
Yeah, for sure. In the sense that it's not a habanero, in the sense that it's not a ghost pepper or a bird pepper, it wasn't that hot. But what Jed tells me was swallowing it wasn't so hard, but the next day passing it was the most intense hell he'd ever gone through. So, you know, there... Just because something isn't the hottest thing you've ever had doesn't mean that it's not painful.
You know, when I was talking about my recap of the ghost pepper thing, I told Katrina that the next day it felt like Casper the unfriendly ghost pepper was f***ing me in the ass. Not good.
Unfriendly.
Okay, Doug also asked if there was a situation at any of the places where something may have gone wrong, and they asked you not to show any of it on your show.
You know what? It happened a couple times. I'll tell you about the one that happened that was kind of funny, although not to them, was the ketchup plant that we went to, Del Monte, had the day before just installed a $3 million bottling system that they were bragging about, saying that it was the Ferrari of ketchup fillers.
And it broke down.
And not only did it break down, it didn't fill anything. It was like they couldn't even get this thing started. And it was awful. We felt bad for them because they had been so proud of this machine. They had spent, you know, millions of dollars getting it going. And, you know, long story short was after 4 or 5 hours of trying to get this thing going, they got like 500 bottles through, which is nothing. That's like a minute, you know. And that's what we filmed. And luckily we had the cameras rolling when it kicked up, and then it immediately shut down and it didn't start up again for the whole day. So yeah, there was a multi-million dollar bottling line that just did not want to cooperate on the day we were filming ketchup.
You know, sometimes I wonder how these companies even make money, because you could buy a bottle of ketchup for like 80 cents.
Yeah. Amazing.
Okay, listener Raymond had an interesting question. During our first interview, you said you guys traveled and filmed for several months putting these shows together. Raymond wondered if you guys filmed these shows back to back to back nonstop, or if you came home for a break in between shows.
Yeah, it's a great question. We did not get nearly enough break. It was tough. In general, we would go out for 3 weeks, film a whole episode, and then I would get to come back to Los Angeles. Now, a couple of times that I got 5 days back, but there were three times where I came back on a Wednesday and went out the very next day, like overnight between the shoots.
Ouch.
When you look at the maps on the show and you see, oh, hey, Bobby was in Pennsylvania for the Chinese episode, and then he was in Pennsylvania again for Pancake Breakfast, you might think to yourself, oh, he shot those two Pennsylvania things, you know, and then later on they were edited together for their individual shows. But no, that's not the way it is. History Channel wanted us to turn in a completed show before we moved on to the next one. So, you know, the travel could get super brutal, you know, and luckily my wife was super patient while I was on the road. But it was very, very difficult. The worst travel days of the whole trip, I was in Boston, and I flew to Dallas, and I flew to Costa Rica, and I flew to Los Angeles, all in less than 40 hours.
Dude.
So if you think you've ever had a brutal travel day, I can up
you. Wow. You know, I know I wasn't alone either in making the comparisons to Unwrapped on Food Network, but some of the facts that you've brought to the table already in the shows you've already done are really interesting. Like refried beans not really being refried.
Yep.
That Tabasco sauce is actually fermented. Or the painstaking process of making soy sauce.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing.
And you know what? I don't think I'd ever seen anyone else do a soy sauce segment. I watch all kinds of food shows, and yeah, that was definitely one of the first. I think we were one of the first to really do that in depth.
There's a lot that you guys do that. This is why I think the comparisons to Unwrapped are unfair now, because I don't think Unwrapped or any food show in general would show a fish at a fish farm laying in a processing plant with their heads freshly cut off.
Yeah. You know what's so funny, Phil? We got so much crap about the ducks and about the cows and all that kind of stuff. I didn't get any negative feedback about watching the catfish flopping around out in the air. And the gators, you know, we're farming and processing gators, and no one cared about that. So just a heads up that a lot of people who care about animal rights really care about cute animal rights.
Yeah, it's true, because catfish are pretty ugly.
Absolutely.
So if you're at the bottom of the food chain, it's no big deal.
Right. People don't seem to care about it nearly as much.
I think people would rather think that we have farms where pork chops walk around. They don't want to face the fact that cute little piggy got snuffed out in order to produce that nice pork chop or bratwurst that people enjoy so much.
Exactly right.
And at the risk of sounding sexist, which I'm not.
Sure. This is a good way to start any sentence, by the way.
How's that segue? Do you think this show works better on a network like History Channel over Food Network because the viewers of History are mostly male and men are less apt to be upset at seeing dead animals in a factory than women would be?
Well, I think that you kind of went into two different questions there. Do I think this works better for a male audience? Absolutely. Do I think it's because men don't get as put off by these kinds of things? Not necessarily. I think that a male audience is more interested in the nuts and bolts of how anything gets made, whether that's an airplane or it's ketchup. But I also think that tangentially, the fact that men wouldn't be put off as much by the animal issues probably lends itself to being explored more. It maybe gave us greater leeway than it would if we were on the Food Channel or Food Network. We might have to pull back more if we were doing something for Food Network or Travel or something like that.
Well, I'll be honest with you, you're fearless.
Thank you.
I'd have crapped my pants opening the door to feed those alligators at the alligator farm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you hold one of them.
Well, you know, they actually cut out a couple of other things. There are a few. I reached into those dark tanks and pulled out a few gators, too. And that, it probably didn't look as good because of the lighting, but in terms of just fear in my eyes, you probably would have seen a better show if we'd showed some of that stuff. But yeah, you know what? The other thing is that guy that hands me the 4.5-footer, he had a huge chunk taken out of his right arm by an alligator that exact size and had lost the vision in his right eye because one of those gators had attacked him in the face.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was serious, serious stuff.
And he looks at you and he goes, "You want to hold it?" And you're like, "Yeah, I don't want to, but now that you've called me out on my own show."
Exactly, right. What's my choice? Exactly.
You know what I just said? I just said, "No, that's okay. I don't want to hurt it."
Yeah, exactly.
His mouth was wide open too, man.
I'll leave it to the professionals next time. But once you call me out, I know you guys don't have a language issue on this show, but I'll tell you that with the producers, I said, there's two things that I really want with this show. Number one, I don't want to fake anything. You know, if I like it, I'm going to tell you I like it. If I don't like it, I'm going to tell you I don't like it. Number two is I don't want to look like a pussy. If someone gives me something to do, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, you have not backed down to one challenge.
No. And that, you know, that comes down to stuff that happens off camera, too. Sometimes they'll say to me, hey, Bobby, climb up that 60-foot silo that's covered in ice. And we're going to shoot you from down here while you do an intro into this area in North Dakota. And I had to say sure, because that was my own personal challenge to myself. You know, I'm not going to say no to anything.
Well, Bobby, you didn't even look scared.
Good. Maybe I faked something then. Faked not being scared.
That thing standing there with its mouth open, it's like, "I'm coming for you, Ricky Bobby Bugner."
Right. Well, plus, I'm telling you, these guys are attacked. You know, they can get hurt in that job. That's no joke. So I respect those guys a lot. Just the same way, you know, you respect a bull rider or something. You can't control, you know, what animals are going to do and how much they either like you or don't like you.
Okay, well, you've been to an alligator farm, and you've been to a chicken farm.
Right.
Well, a duck farm.
Duck, right.
Close enough. Even the guy carving up that alligator says it tastes like chicken.
Right.
Why the hell don't we just eat chickens?
You know, I couldn't get anyone to answer that question at all. I asked that about 10 times during the whole process. And I couldn't. And it does. It tastes. I'm sure you've had it. If you have a fried alligator nugget, you know it tastes a lot like a chicken nugget. The one time that it wasn't a good thing that it tasted like chicken was when I ate the raw gator. And you know, down in Louisiana, number one, no one does sushi, and number two, no one eats gator raw. So what you didn't see was people horrified that I was willing to put that raw gator meat in my mouth. They just couldn't stand. You know, couldn't believe that someone was going to do that. But the problem with the gator sashimi was that it actually did taste like chicken sashimi. It had that chewy, rubbery, raw chicken flavor that is horrible, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. You know, once you cook it, it tastes great, but I wouldn't recommend it raw to anybody else.
Hey, let's hear it for season two.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah, I don't know what I'll get myself into if we get a season two.
What shows are left in season one that haven't aired yet?
We've got a pizza episode. We've got pancake breakfast. We've got one that focuses on the buffet at the Rio Hotel in Vegas. We've got a family style Italian, and there's one. Oh, and ballpark. And ballpark is pretty fun. Hot dogs and beer and drumstick ice cream cones, Cracker Jacks.
What ballparks do you go to?
We only go to one ballpark. We go to the San Bernardino team. That's the AAA for the Dodgers, and that's kind of where the wraps are, but it's focusing on the food of the ballparks: mustard and hot dogs, beer, Cracker Jacks.
And you're going to visit some farms as well, right?
For that episode, did I visit farms for that episode? I don't think so. I don't think there was anything farmed in that.
I meant in general.
Oh, yeah, in general. Oh, absolutely, yeah, for sure. For the pizza episode alone, I went to an olive farm, which was really exciting. I went to a fresh herb farm for oregano. Mushrooms. Oh, the mushroom scenes in the pizza episode are really exciting. That was at a place up in Pennsylvania. It's a lime mine that had been abandoned back in the 50s. And this mine is something like 3/4 mile below the surface of the earth, but it covers the same square footage as the city of San Francisco. And these guys realized that mushrooms would just grow wonderfully in this lime mine. So like an old Scooby-Doo episode, you know, there are these endless caverns that you just have no idea where they're going, but you pull off to the side and they have, you know, 3 acres of mushrooms growing. It's amazing. Underground.
Again, a pizza episode, and you're going into a lime mine.
Yeah, I know. Pretty awesome stuff. You know, and then for the pizza episode, talking about the contrast of the huge to the small, that mushroom operation, of course, is huge. We went to an olive company that's the biggest in the country. But then for pepperoni, we went to Volpe in St. Louis. And it's a third-generation Salumeri who is working out of the same corner store that her grandfather did 100 years ago and making these amazing salamis and specifically pepperoni for, you know, for our pizza. So that's a great show, just showing the contrasts of the large to the small.
If you do a second season, what kinds of food would you want to focus on?
Boy, you know, I feel like there's obviously so much stuff that we could do, but I think easiest ones, I think a sushi episode is just a no-brainer. You know, talking about miso paste, talking about the wasabi horseradish, both the real stuff and the green stuff that we all eat and think is wasabi. You know, the vinegar that makes up the vinegared rice. You know, there's so many different things we could do for a sushi episode. And the other thing, the other one that I pitched to the company, and I, who knows if they'd take it, but I think it would sure be interesting, it would be a pet food episode, Food Tech Takes on Pet Food, where maybe we talk about fish flakes, and we talk about dog kibble, and maybe wet cat food, and then some kind of exotic chow, like, you know, the gators, they have their own chow. You know, what goes into feeding these exotics that are raised? And then beyond that, maybe, and this is just, you know, spitballing here, you know, what goes into raising mice to feed snakes or, you know, some other kind of food that you wouldn't think of as like a prepared food. So that those are a couple of ideas that have come up. Another one that came up was sea and air, you know, like showing how they feed guys on a submarine and how they feed astronauts in space. So, you know, there's so much food out there. Now, that you know, that kind of goes against the how America gets fed one, but I'm just giving you some examples of stuff that we've tossed around.
Yeah, that just can go on forever. Is there anything that's going on with Piper Downs that you'd like to plug?
Yeah, my drummer just gave birth to her son this morning at 7:55 in the morning. So now there's a whole second generation of Piper Downs happening right now.
Nice. Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. So we're off the road. You know, we aren't going to play for probably at least another month or so while she gets back into playing shape. But we're you know, we're ready to rock anytime. I have a when a gig comes along that we can't pass up. You know, we've got people that can kind of fill in along the lines, but the new Piper Downs record is in the can. We're just waiting to get it out. So that's the news with us right now.
Cool. Hey, Bobby, thanks for coming back on, man.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. And, you know, keep your fingers crossed for second season so I can come back and bother you again sometime.
Absolutely. I appreciate you taking the time out, man.
My pleasure.
Food Tech with Bobby Bogner, Thursdays on the History Channel. Visit history.com for your local listings.
Okay, is nutritional labeling just absolutely a joke? I have in my hand a pack of saltine crackers, and it says under nutrition facts here that one serving is 60 calories. But listen to this. This is the punchline. How many crackers did they consider to be one serving? 5. Now, who did you ever know who sat down with a pack of saltine crackers and ate just 5 of them? It's all about getting us to think we're consuming a smaller number of calories than we are. Now, the FDA is rethinking this right now about what actually should go on those nutritional labels. But I want you to know that with any packaged good, you need to really pay attention to how much of it you're eating and not just look at that calorie count, because odds are that you're consuming far, far more calories than you think. And then where do they end up?
Hey, here's some big news. Top Chef Masters Season 2 debuts April 7th on Bravo. Chef Ludo returns from Season 1 along with Wiley Dufresne, Govan Armstrong, Graham Elliott Bowles, Rick Moonen, and Rick Tremonto. Should be a great season. I can't wait. I love that we're getting some Top Chef in between Top Chefs. Does that make sense? You know what I mean. Anyway, check out BravoTV.com for more information on Top Chef Masters 2, debuts April 7th. And cheer on Chef Ludo. He was jobbed last year. All right? Come on. Pig ear quesadillas. You know he can do better than that. If he comes out with that croque monsieur with the squid ink foie gras sandwich, forget about it. It's history. Everyone's done. May as well just pack your bags and go home now. I think he's going very deep this time around. Don't miss it. It's going to be fantastic. Also, did you read what's going on in Italy with McDonald's. McDonald's once again crapping on the world. Let's see here. Fast food chain McDonald's has gained an unlikely sponsor for its all-new Italian burger. Italy's agriculture minister, who has had to defend himself against accusations of selling out and sacrificing the country's culinary reputation by giving government approval to the sandwich. Defending his position, Luca Zaia said the McItaly burger, using all Italian beef, Asaggio cheese, and artichoke spread, would pump 3.1 million euros more a month into the pockets of Italian farmers grappling with tough economic times. But for a country that gave birth to the slow food movement a quarter of a century ago and prides itself on very delicious and healthy cuisine, Zaia's enthusiastic support of McDonald's has been hard to swallow. It didn't help that the minister and company executives launched the new burger last month at McDonald's flagship restaurant in Rome's historic center near the Spanish Steps, the chain's first Italian outpost. The opposition Democratic Party has also slammed Zaia's use of an official government seal of approval for the new burger. On the McItaly's promotional material, it's a seal saying, "Under the patronage of the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry," a highly coveted government endorsement that is more often seen on museum exhibits and cultural initiatives than fast food containers. This is just sick. The country that birthed the slow food movement finally toppled by the king of fast food, the ultimate bad guy. I'm shocked that Italians would even eat that shit. Seriously, aren't they supposed to be like the ultimate food snobs? You make pasta wrong for an Italian and they're up your ass. I mean, they're okay with eating at the altar of the Golden Arches all of a sudden. What the f**k? Dude, you are killing me.
Whole Foods CEO John Mackey recently announced a program to provide store discounts for employees who don't smoke, have low blood pressure, cholesterol, and body mass index. The incentive program is aimed at promoting a healthier lifestyle and lowering healthcare costs for the company. The voluntary program divides employees into four categories: bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. Those earning platinum health status will get 30% discounts. Gold gets 27%, silver 25%, and bronze wins 22% off. But not everyone is sold. Some critics say the program is discriminatory, giving those in better shape an unfair advantage. Obesity awareness groups are encouraging customers to take their business elsewhere. And Oregon's Bureau of Labor and Industry says there could be legal issues associated with the free health screenings. A spokesman for the Bureau worries that the information Whole Foods collects from the free health screenings could be used in ways that violate employee confidentiality rights and even basic federal health privacy laws. The company's senior health eating and wellness educator tells us the program falls within the company's larger initiative for healthy living. She says knowing your numbers can act as a motivation to spur your efforts to health and longevity. A Whole Foods spokesman says people are striving to be healthy, and that's what Whole Foods Market is all about.
All right, that's all I have this week, kids. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Bobby Bogner for spending so much time here, for checking in again with us. Always great to hear from Bobby. Please watch Food Tech Thursdays on the History Channel. Check the website, mylifeasafoodie.com. I'll have links to Bobby's Facebook page and an email address you can use to let History Channel know just how much you like Bobby's show and how you'd like to see it return for a second season. Music in this episode from Nickelback. If you like the song, download it in the iTunes Store or directly from their website, nickelback.com. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie.
She had her eyes on the prize as the girl next door. You grow up quick. This fight.
she's getting undressed, 'cause she rocks it like the naughty wicked. Just going easy 'cause he paid for a chest. Yeah, he loves his little naughty wicked witch of the west. Far too pretty to begin.